Hello and welcome back to the Cool Your Jets podcast. I am Michael Nania. It is January 28th, 2026, 8:50 a.m. on the Eastern, on the East Coast as I record this. And the New York Jets basically have one coach employed by the franchise. His name is Aaron Glenn. He has a 3-14 record and a 203 negative 203 point differential. He has never seen one of his players intercept a pass, but he's seen them allow 36 touchdowns. He has only seen them take the ball away four times. His team has turned it over 23 times. He has never blown out another NFL team, but his own team has been blown out a whopping total of nine times. And yet this coach has been allowed to purge his entire coaching staff, pinning the blame on everyone but the man who hired all those coaches, which of course would be himself. And that's where we stand with the Senior Bowl practices underway, the combine less than a month away. The Jets have one coach for all intents and purposes on their roster. And it's the same coach who just oversaw arguably the worst Jets team of all time. If you want to get technical, it's the 1976 team based on point differential. Based on win-loss, it's the 1996 team. But I don't know, this 2025 team made a really, really good case to at least be in the top three there. And this coach has been allowed to hold everyone accountable but himself for the struggles that we witnessed this past season, with struggles being a very respectful word to encapsulate what we watched for 17 games, or at least some of us had, you know, the insanity to decide to watch. I know there are very sane people out there who at a certain point decided they weren't going to waste their Sundays watching this team, but I am not one of those sane people. I am completely insane, and I watched all 17 games and the film from those games, and it was not fun. It was less fun than 2020. I mean, 2020, as bad as it was, I feel like even then there were ways to find positives. Like Becton had a promising rookie season. Mims was making some plays. LaMichael Perine was doing stuff, I guess. I don't know. I feel like even that season there were more ways to kind of reach and be like, oh, we got some players. Like Foley Fadakasi was pretty good. I don't know. Maybe it was pretty similar, but point being, I mean, you had to reach really, really far. You had to have arm length like, man, who had long arms that someone has drafted? Becton. Becton had long arms. You had to have arm length of Becton's caliber to reach far enough down to the bottom of the barrel to scrape for the positives that we saw this season. And, you know, the special teams was great, obviously, but it's hard to even trust in that as something that you can build upon, because special teams is so erratic from year to year, and it's unlikely they're going to be this great again. So you can't really be excited about that. Juwan Briggs was great. The offensive line was pretty solid. The tackles are really promising. That's about all I got for you. I mean, the only superstar in this roster is Garrett Wilson. He did barely even play this season. Still led the team in receiving yards. Breece Hall had a good year, but he's not under contract, and I don't think he wants to be back based on what we've seen, but we'll see if they franchise tag him. And that's about it. That's really about all you could say positive. And despite that, Aaron Glenn has been given the power to just purge this entire staff, and it kind of spits in the face of all the messaging that we got throughout the season. You know, the team starts 0-1, 0-2, 3-4, 5-6, 7. You're sitting there 0-7, and, you know, the season's already gone at that point. And that's when we start to get this messaging about, you know, this is the start of a process. You can't rush things. You know, the exact quotes that he gave, this was in December, but the exact quotes were that, you know, fans should not let go of the rope and that we have a plan. Well, how do you justify that now as we sit here in late January and all of the coaches who were part of this so-called plan that the Jets have been seeing through from the beginning, none of them are here. It's just you. I don't get it. So how was there a plan from the beginning if you don't even have the patience to see it through. When they decided to keep Glenn, you know, obviously this coming up from Woody Johnson, when you made that decision to keep Aaron Glenn, which I've been vocal, I don't think that was the right decision, but you decided to do that. The path moving forward from there had to be, okay, let's see through what we started. You know, that was the whole justification of the season. You lost 14 games. You set numerous records of ineptitude. You got outscored by over 200 points. All of that was supposed to be because you were setting a foundation. You know, you went young, you traded your superstar players. You know, it was a bridge year and all of that. So the whole point of keeping Glenn was supposed to be, let's see this thing through. And that's not to say that everyone should have come back. I think the Wilkes firing was justified. I think there are multiple firings that they've made here in the past week or so that it makes sense. And by the way, this is just, this podcast is just me kind of not ranting. I was going to say ranting, but just summarizing my thoughts on what's gone down here the past few weeks with this coaching overhaul for the Jets, where it leaves them moving forward, and why this is a complete disaster, in my opinion. That's just kind of what we're getting into here. So I know I didn't really set the stage in the beginning. I kind of just dove in because this is I struggle to even fathom what we're witnessing at this point, the fact that it's real. But that's what we're going to go through here. So some of those firings I think were justified. Wilkes, 100%. Predictable play calling, regression under his watch. His scheme, you know, his schematic philosophies didn't really mesh with Glenn. Made sense. Good. Someone had to be held accountable for the defense. Made sense. Some of the assistants, I think the quarterback's coach, Charles London, I don't know why that hire was made from the beginning. His background is mostly in running backs. So, yeah, get him out of here. You're expecting to have a young quarterback at some point of the draft here. Yes, sure. Linebacker's coach, Aaron Curry, sure. The linebacker regression from Sherwood and Quincy Williams this season was abhorrent, so that is a justifiable firing. And if you want to throw like one more defensive assistant in there, Scott Turner, sure, all that makes sense. But when it got extended out to 7 coaches, you know, we're talking 3 lower-level assistants, linebackers, defensive line, on top of Wilkes already being fired. And then the offense, you got Scott Turner in there. And we're talking about demoting Tanner Engstrand. This is where it starts to get to the point of, okay, I get that changes need to happen, but you're kind of spitting in the face of the messaging that you used to justify what we saw this year, which, like we said, the whole point was supposed to be, this is the beginning, this is the foundation, we have a plan. These are the words that they use. It's not like we're making this language up. So if there was a plan from the beginning, shouldn't Tanner Engstrand have been a part of it? You know, you hired him as your initial offensive coordinator, as a defensive-minded head coach. This guy is who you tabbed, brought over from, you know, you knew him from Detroit. Surely he must have been part of the long-term plan. And there's nothing that happened this season that justifies Tanner Engstrand losing his play-calling privileges. Now, if you wanted to bring in a veteran offensive mind to support him, you know, fire Scott Turner. He's on the younger end. He hasn't been great as an OC in the league. Okay, dump him. Let's get Frank Reich in that role. Let's get another offensive coach to support Engstrand as a play caller, because the results were bad this year and that falls on him. Sure, that makes sense. But he didn't do anything that justifies deviating from the plan that they seemingly had from the beginning, which is Tanner Engstrand overseeing this offense for the long haul. The results were terrible, but we all watched the games this season. The Jets had 3 bad quarterbacks playing. They had, you know, with Garrett Wilson barely playing, they had an atrocious receiving room that was dropping passes left and right. And receivers were open throughout the season. I'm not saying he was secretly a genius in that with average quarterbacking, this would have been an elite offense. There were legitimate concerns in his play calling, and you know, there was growth to be made. But he was a first-year coordinator dealing with a brutal situation in terms of game scripts, in terms of the talent on the roster, not to mention the fact that they pinpointed Justin Fields, which seemingly was an Aaron Glenn-led move because of the overarching team philosophy of run the ball, physicality, toughness, control the clock, all those old school adages. That seemed like more of an Aaron Glenn move to get Justin Fields. And Justin Fields is not a match to what the type of scheme that Tanner Engstrom picked up from Detroit and brought elements of to the Jets, but he had to mold to Justin Fields, and that obviously went up in flames. So he was dealing with a lot of stuff, and the separation was there. You could see it on film throughout the year, and if you would like some numbers to back it up, those are there as well. This is according to FTN Fantasy. The Jets had the eighth highest wide open target rate in the league at over 10% of their passes, and the threshold for that is 5 yards of separation. So that's one out of every 10 passes someone is basically uncovered. That's a really good number. He was right ahead of Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins. The Lions were 2 spots behind them, and Ben Johnson and the Bears were 3 spots behind them. So that's the type of company you want to keep and the type of metric you want to see to evaluate your offensive coordinator independent of his his talent, or your head coach, offensive play caller, whoever. That's a good sign for the play calling and the scheme. On top of that, they had the 4th best average separation on intermediate targets at 2.9 yards, and the coaches ahead of them in that category were the Bills and Joe Brady, who just got promoted as head coach, which that's a separate story. I don't see what the Bills are doing there, but pure play calling and scheme-wise, I think Joe Brady's pretty solid. Ben Johnson obviously speaks for himself, and then Clint Kubiak has been amazing with Sam Darnold and the Seahawks this year. So again, like, the metrics are there to back up the fact that Engstrand was getting people open. Separation was there. It just wasn't being capitalized on because the Jets don't have good quarterbacks and receivers, and we could all see that. But now he loses his job because of it. And I know the initial push was that they wanted to take away his play calling and give it to a veteran coach, but that's insulting. I don't blame Engstrom for at that point deciding, okay, I don't even want to be here, as opposed to being demoted when this was the first year of a long-term rebuild plan. We expectedly struggled, but I, as a coach, this from Engstrom's perspective, showed potential, did my job, I think, pretty well. And now I'm losing my privileges to some old coach off the street like Frank Reich, who got fired in season the last 2 times he was in the league. It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. And it really points to the fact that I don't think Aaron Glenn knows what he's doing. I don't think he has a plan. I don't think he had a plan from the start. And if he did, he's panicking and deviating from it because he feels the pressure that he's going to be fired next year if they lose the first 2 or 3 games. And that's an awful situation for a franchise to be in. And this is why he should have been fired after the season. Because if a coach is, after 1 season, which was supposed to be the start of a long-term rebuild, that's what he walked into. You know, we're coming off the Aaron Rodgers era, trying to get through some of these contracts that they're still on the hook for going into this season. Get the team younger, start over. This was supposed to be year one of a long-term rebuild. So if you have the head coach leading that going into the second season, and he's already under pressure to win the first, even, like I said, 3 games just to save his job, he's going to start undermining the long-term rebuild aspect of the way you're approaching the team building. He's firing the entire coaching staff that was supposed to help him see through this vision that apparently the ownership still believes in. He's undermining all of the long-term rebuild stuff. He feels the pressure that he has to win to save his job. And so he's firing coaches that don't even deserve to be fired. And some changes need to be made. Like I said, Wilkes, Curry, London, justified firings. But Engstrand is crossing the line. He is a young first-year coordinator who showed potential. And it clearly from the start was part of your vision because you hired him to lead the side of the ball you don't excel at, or, you know, you don't have a background in. So if there was a plan from the start, he was surely a part of it. So how do you justify now, having fired him, that this was all part of a plan? This whole season we just went through, it was all part of the build. You know, fans just got to stay patient. We have something in mind. No, you don't have anything in mind because everyone you just had to establish this is gone. It's just you. And all the coaches that you hired, you handpicked, it only took 1 year for all those hires to flame out. That's where the Jets are left at this point, with a coach who looked pretty lost throughout his entire rookie season, now completely on his own. And he's going to have to fill all these roles with those jobs being even less appealing than they were when he struck out on them the first time. Think about it from that perspective. He, you know, just admitted that he struck out on all of these hires, but those jobs were a lot more appealing last year when he made them. You know, fresh start. I think Glenn had a good reputation around the league. You know, you're coming in with a team in transition. You feel like you're going to have some patience in that type of role. But now you're looking at a guy who clearly is feeling the pressure that he's going to be fired. Not only that, come to work for a head coach who, in addition to struggling last year and looking inept in the role, now he's proven to you that he's not going to have patience with you. Even if he does survive this season somehow, why should I, as a prospective coach, look at what's happening in Florham Park and be like, that's a place I want to work? This first-year head coach just had the audacity to win three games and fire his entire staff of hand-picked coaches. Why would I want to work for that coach? And that's even if he does, you know, keep the job. If he doesn't keep the job, you're probably getting fired too, because he would have picked you. So it's, he already struck out on all these hires last year when it was a, you know, standard level attractiveness of a job. Not super appealing, but I don't think unappealing, because the patience of entering, you know, a long-term rebuild, I think, is appealing for a coach. You would have thought that, you know, you were going to get some patience. Obviously, that did not play out. But now you don't have that. And that's why the Jets ultimately are probably going to have to settle for coaches like Frank Reich, Wink Martindale, these old has-been coaches who could only get back into the league with a job, a situation like the Jets, a desperate team that is just going to take a quote-unquote big name to try to justify the moves that they just made. It's an absolute disaster. I think, logically speaking, the Jets' best bet is to go for a young, completely unproven guy, you know, just roll the dice and see if it works, because a Reich or a Martindale is just, there's no point. These are old coaches who the game has passed by. Neither of them has been successful as a coordinator for at least 5 years in the NFL. And it does nothing to move the needle after firing a guy like Engstrand, who had a ceiling, had upside. And now we're just going to get coaches who are even older, even more behind the times, and just magically hope it works for some reason. So I don't know. This is a rough situation. I think, you know, after keeping Aaron Glenn, let's rewind to the Bills game, and a couple days pass, it's clear that Aaron Glenn is not getting fired. At that point, you know, people were split. There were, you know, people on my side who thought they should have canned him. There were people who supported keeping him and wanted to see through his vision and, you know, just give him a chance with better talent, because obviously the talent on this roster was atrocious this year. So it was fair to have some optimism. I didn't agree, but I understood if that's where, you know, people stood on that side of the debate. But what do you hold on to now? Because even if you thought there was potential shown this season, something to build upon, a lot of that came from offense. There was nothing on defense. I think we can all agree on that. But offensively, you could see some seeds planted. It's just that they didn't have a quarterback and obviously any receivers. Now the guy who designed that offense is gone. So what do you even hold on to at this point? And the replacement is probably going to be an old coach who hasn't been successful in a long time. So I don't know how anyone has any sort of confidence in the Glenn-led Jets at this point. I truly don't. I think it would be an absolute reach to claim that there's any sort of real optimism. That's not to say they can't succeed, because crazy things happen in the league, and obviously we're all going to root for it to happen and to be proven wrong, you know, for those of us who are skeptical at this point. But I don't see how you could even pretend to be optimistic about what's happening with this team right now. They are rudderless. They are being led into a deadly storm by a captain who's steering the ship on his own because he threw his entire crew overboard, even though he recruited that entire crew and was steering the ship all the way into this storm. But that's where the Jets are at. So we'll, I don't know. I feel like generally I try to put the most optimistic spin on things that I can, because I don't like being pessimistic. I try not to be. I'm going to call things how I see it. If it's amazing, I'll label it as amazing. If it's terrible, I'll label it as terrible. If it's average, I'll say it's average. But generally speaking, I think I try to find the optimistic perspective to leave it off with, because I don't want to move forward with pessimism, because I don't think that's a good way to not just approach sports fandom, but life in general. Like, I don't think there's any reason to be pessimistic about things. I think you should just find the best case scenario and really cling to the hope of that. And throughout the past 15 years of the Jets missing the playoffs on a yearly basis, I've consistently been able to find things throughout all of it. 2020, 21, 2016 and 17 were bad. There was always something you could cling to that gave you legitimate hope to think, I think we could turn this around. Gave you legitimate belief that there was a path back to contention within the near future, you know, put out whatever number of years on it you want to put on it, whether it's within the next year or 2 years, there was always a way to see it. But right now, I don't know what that is. I truly don't know what the path is to the Jets being good. I don't want to say in the near future. This year, I have never been more certain that the Jets are going to struggle in the upcoming season. But that brings us to the next point, which is, what are Jets fans rooting for this year? Because if we're projecting success in the near future, like I said, I don't know how you see them being good this year or coming close to the playoffs in 2026. But 27, you know, this team has a lot of assets. They're a young team. They have two firsts this year, along two high second rounders, three first rounders in 27. If the Jets have a really bad season this year, the quarterback class is supposed to be a lot better this year. I could see them turning it around within the next couple years after that with the new head coach. I'm just saying, it's to each their own what you want to root for. Week one's going to arrive, and I'm going to hope, like, please, Aaron Glenn, Frank Reich, Wink Martindale, combined 170-plus years of age between the three of them, please go 17-0. Obviously, I'm going to root for that. I think every fan will be when the team is 0-0 at the start. But once it inevitably starts going off the rails by halftime of that opening game, I think the quickest path for this team to get back into contention, and also the justification for why you might still keep Glenn at this point on January 28th, the quickest path back might just be to bottom out again. I mean, I don't see any other way that the Jets quickly get back into this. Being realistic at this point about where they could possibly go under Aaron Glenn, given what we saw last year and given what we're seeing the past month, just the dysfunction, the lack of a plan, the lack of a vision, and the way that these moves completely undermine any even dream of a potential plan that you could have contrived throughout this season. You know, it's as directionless as they've been since I've been watching them, and they've been coached by Adam Gase. They've, you know, fired Robert Saleh in the middle of the season, whatever you want to pick out there. They've been in some rough spots, but they've never been this directionless under their current regime. So that's why it's, I don't know, maybe the main reason you keep Aaron Glenn at this point instead of just getting it over with is to bottom out again and create an even more appealing situation for the inevitable next head coach. Not saying I'm rooting for that or that any Jets fan should, but just being realistic and projecting the future, trying to see how this team could get from where it is right now with a 3-win head coach and no coaching staff going into the month of February. The quickest path from that to being even a playoff team, let alone championship contender, It's not happening under this regime. So I think it might be best to just stockpile assets for the next one. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see who the Jets end up hiring to fill these many, many coaching roles that they now have to fill. I've never seen anything like this. I don't think I have. Definitely not with the Jets. Across the league, obviously I follow the league closely. I don't have encyclopedic enough of a memory to recall every single coaching search in the NFL since I started watching. So maybe something like this has happened and I'm forgetting. It couldn't have been a good result, I'm guessing, if it has happened. But I feel like this is unprecedented to win three games in the first year of a head coach and as low quality as a 3-14 team as it was. Not competitive losses, not blowout wins, historically bad. And then he gets to fire everyone. And he keeps his job and he gets to just hold everyone accountable that he hired. It's strange to say the least. So we'll see where the Jets go from here. What coaches they end up filling these roles with. And I'm struggling to be optimistic here. I don't know. I'm going to, you know, we'll move forward throughout this offseason and we'll talk draft, we'll talk free agency and, you know, give our 2 cents on who the Jets should add to make the roster as talented as possible and hopefully win as many games as they can this season and, you know, build the foundation of a roster that can compete moving forward. But I don't see how you look at what has happened this past, you know, week or so and evaluate it with anything except harsh criticism. I truly do not see the justification for it. And like I said, you can go back to early January when they decided to keep Glenn. And even though I was opposed to that, I could see the other side. You know, I understand why fans supported that at that point, given the lack of talent on the roster. And you know, it was glaringly bad by the end of the season. So I understood it, didn't agree, but understood. You know, I could see why you would want to see it through, give him another shot with better talent and all of that. But at this point, what we've seen the past week, you know, with Tanner Engstrand's firing being the tipping point, I was skeptical before that, but once they went through and dumped Engstrand, I think that is the last straw to where I don't see how anyone can look at this situation and be like, you know, I see what he's doing. I see the vision here. There's a plan. You know, besides the fact that he said there was a plan the whole season and then fired every single coach who was part of that plan, besides that, I see what he's doing. I don't see how anyone can come to that conclusion right now. The only way you can react to this is with harsh criticism. That is what is deserved of Aaron Glenn and the Jets right now. We'll see where it goes from here. Hopefully they do some things that appear a little more cohesive and competent. Let's just set the bar there, competency, because I haven't seen anything competent from this team in quite a while at this point. So let's leave it there. Relatively quick one. Just wanted to go through the coaching chaos going on the past week or so here, and let's see what the Jets do from here. All right, recording this late because after this podcast dropped, we got the news that the Jets have hired a defensive coordinator, Brian Duker, former Miami Dolphins defensive pass game coordinator and secondary coach, conducted a virtual interview with the Jets yesterday, that being Tuesday, January 27th. So a few quick thoughts on this to close out. Figured I'd jump back on and add those in since it happened very quickly within the next few hours after the episode came out. Look, first and foremost, I can't provide any sort of detailed thoughts on him as a coach or what he brings to the table. I don't think anyone can because he hasn't operated in a, you know, primary role on a coaching staff. Pass game coordinator, Miami the last 2 seasons, along with the secondary coach. And Miami did not have a lot of secondary talent this year, obviously traded Jalen Ramsey. Results were not great for their pass defense or their defense overall. Previous season, they were actually pretty decent in terms of pass defense and their scoring defense. That was when they still had Ramsey on the roster, But so yeah, I don't know what you go off of in terms of results or anything. Main takeaway here is that it seems like Aaron Glenn is looking to call plays this season, given that he hired a young coach with no play calling experience. I think Glenn is looking to go down on his own. He wants to go down with the ship this year. He's willing to, if he's going to lose, he's going to do it calling plays. He's going to do it his way. That's kind of what I see here. There's no confirmation yet that Aaron Glenn is going to call plays this year or that it was the motivation behind this hiring. But given that, you know, this is an extremely inexperienced candidate here, only 36 years old, past game coordinator, for the last 2 years is the highest experience that he has, and not with a super successful defense. I think Glenn just wants someone who he's familiar with. He knows Duker from Detroit. 3 years as an assistant with the Lions staff under Glenn from 2021 to 23, he was promoted each year, came in as a defensive assistant, then to safeties coach, then to DBs coach. So clearly someone he's familiar with and seems to hold in a high regard. So I think the hiring is mostly just him getting someone in who he's familiar with, who can reinforce Glenn's message in terms of player development and game planning. But I think play calling on game day is going to go to Glenn. And if he's going to get fired 3 games into the season or after the year, I think he wants it to be after the plays that were called came off of his own play sheet. So that's what I think the mindset is here. But you can't talk about this hiring without acknowledging the process that led up to it. So the Jets initially had 8 candidates for this role that were reported, I believe this was about a week ago, by the team's official website. So these are official interviews reported by the team, 8 different candidates, and only a couple of those we got reported second interviews. Chris Harris, who was the interim coordinator last year, Wink Martindale being the biggest name candidate of the bunch. But Duker was not a part of that initial list. We didn't hear anything about this guy until 22 hours before this hiring was announced. The Jets, through their official social media, revealed yesterday, this being Tuesday, January 27th, that he had done a virtual interview for the defensive coordinator position. But before that, he was not part of the initial candidate list. There were no reports, rumors about it or anything. Virtual interview yesterday, less than 24 hours later, he's the Jets defensive coordinator. So, and that's with, during that time span, the news dropping of Tanner Engstrand essentially being fired as the offensive coordinator. So putting aside Duker, who he is as a coach and all of that, because, you know, maybe he's a good coach. I don't know the guy. You know, Aaron Glenn knows him from Detroit. He got promoted throughout his time there. Young coach. And I like them going for a young coach. I would prefer a guy like this as opposed to just Wink Martindale is a big name. Let him coach the defense. But he's well over 60 years old, hasn't been good in the NFL for years, and you're probably just going to have an outdated scheme and be terrible in defense. I prefer the young coach, and Duker might be a good coach. Putting that aside, though, the process only further speaks to how much of a mess has played out under Aaron Glenn here. How do you have a list of 8 candidates? An exhaustive search, too. It's January 28th. The season finale was 3 weeks ago. How do you have a list of 8 candidates and then suddenly someone comes in with a virtual interview and you hire him the next day? This being right after it becomes, you know, national news that Tanner Engstrand, your offensive coordinator, has parted ways with the team after you tried to demote him. To me, it clearly points to how unattractive the job is. The fact that of their 8 targeted candidates, a list that, by the way, already, you know, did not include some of the candidates that got quickly hired by other teams, you know, Jonathan Gannon, Christian Parker, some of these more coveted candidates. So already not the strongest list of all time in terms of proven successful names or coveted names, up and coming coaches, already not the greatest list. Not only could you not get anyone off of there, but like you just turn around and hire someone who wasn't part of the search. So it definitely points to this not being the most attractive job. To me, I feel like the only way you can look at this, and this is speculation. I don't know the actual process. I'm not a reporter. I don't want to be a reporter. But just reading between the lines and trying to guess what the heck is going on here, the way I see it is that Glenn probably realized nobody wanted to come in here and call play and, you know, be the coordinator with Glenn calling plays. There's a couple factors to that. You know, first and foremost, it's not an attractive job in general, given that Glenn is a one-year head coach who won 3 games. He made the job less attractive by firing tons of coaches. He perpetuated that by firing Engstrand yesterday. So given all of that, I think it was a very unattractive job just in general. But now knowing with Brian Duker hired, or not knowing, but having the likelihood that Glenn is looking to call plays, a lot of these candidates were probably put off by that. So I think Glenn just realized this was not an attractive job. He was not going to find a high-ranked or preferred candidate who was going to come in here and allow him to call plays. So he just reached out. And, you know, this being late in the process, the Senior Bowl practices are going on, and the Jets don't have coordinators to go there and scout it. So we're late in the process. I think he kind of just panicked and said, you know what, no preferred candidate is going to come here, so I'm going to reach out to an assistant that I know and someone who's low enough on the coaching ladder to where they're definitely going to take this promotion. They would be not desperate enough, but it would be enough of a leap to where they would certainly take this job, as opposed to someone of higher status in the coaching market, like a Jim Leonard, for example. That was never going to happen. His stock is way too high for him to put his reputation on the line by hopping on Aaron Glenn's sinking ship. And now, look what's happening. He's a leading candidate for the Bills. He's a leading candidate for the Chargers. Competent, solid teams where he can go in and, you know, in Buffalo, he would be in charge of that defense now with Sean McDermott out the door and Joe Brady taking over. And in Los Angeles, you get to work with Jim Harbaugh, a guy who's a pretty darn good head coach. He was never going to come to the Jets. And, you know, he was the most preferred candidate among Jets fans. He would have been a great hire. But even the rest of this list, the names on there who were not as popular or well-known, I think most of these guys probably didn't want to come into this situation either. So if you're Aaron Glenn, it's January 28th, the Senior Bowl's going on, you don't have any coordinators, you know, offensive or defensive coordinators, most of your assistant roles are vacant. I think he just panicked and said, look, I'm calling plays this year. Let's just get this over with. I'm going to call an assistant that I know and trust, and he's going to accept this promotion because it would be a massive leap for him. He can't turn it down. Let's just move on. That is my guess as to what happened, but, you know, whether that's correct or not, and however you want to spin this, I increasingly, as more and more news comes in, it's becoming more and more difficult to justify what is happening, to put a positive spin on it, to muster up any sort of optimism about Aaron Glenn leading this team to success. It's a sinking ship. It's filled with holes. There aren't even any maintenance people on the ship to patch them because the captain threw them all overboard. They got scooped up by the sharks already. So I don't know. We're going into the storm. Our ship is halfway underwater. Just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic at this point is pretty much how I see it. So I wish I had more optimism to offer, but I don't. Not right now. I really don't. So that does it for me. Had to put this little bit on at the end because the Duker news felt relevant to this podcast and what we talked about today. So thanks for listening. I don't know what my parting words are. It's a rough time for the Jets fan base. We've had a lot of rock bottoms, and you always feel like it can't get any lower, any rockier. But this has gotten so hopeless that I yearn for 2017. I almost yearn for 2019 and Adam Gase at this point. All, like we said earlier, all of these points in Jets history where they were coming off of 5 wins, coming off of 2 wins in 2020, all of these other low points, there was enough there to where you could see a path to success. And right now, I just do not know what that path is. So Brian Duker is the Jets defensive coordinator. Aaron Glenn seems to be trending towards calling plays, which, you know, isn't the worst thing. He did a really good job in his last season as the Lions play caller and defensive coordinator. So maybe that's an improvement over Steve Wilks, an improvement over whoever else they'd hired. But at the end of the day, regardless of that, it cannot be overlooked how messy of a situation this is. And the fact that there's no coherent plan, and you just can't make the argument that there is or that there ever was at this point. There's just no evidence of anything cohesive, concrete, or even remotely competent going on within the Jets organization right now. So that's my take on it. Hopefully some things can transpire in the coming months that give us a little more optimism going into this season. But I think that'll do it for me.